Futuro Media and PRX. Everyone, it's In the Thick. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
Yo, and I'm Julio Ricardo Varela, and this is ITT Sound Off. And yeah, okay.
Trying to laugh.
Yep, always. Smiles.
But, you know, seriously, our first topic sucks.
Yeah, it does.
We want to talk about the violent attack on House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's husband. Last Friday, Paul Pelosi was attacked by an intruder with a hammer and zip ties. The suspect, David DePape, had posted a variety of conspiracy theories online. Posts about voter fraud, interestingly. In the aftermath of the attack, Republicans were amplifying lies and misinformation about the attack. And this is where it gets really ugly.
Yes.
Some Republican candidates for office, like Carrie Lake, she's running for governor in Arizona. And in Virginia, the Republican governor, Glenn Youngkin, they actually made fun of the attack at campaign events.
Yeah.
Which is disgusting. Mm-hmm. Again, in the world's greatest democracy, okay. Barbara Rodriguez, who's a reporter for 19th News, put this into context about how experts talk about this attack as, quote, pointing to a form of violent misogyny that is part and parcel of larger threats to our American democracy. Our producer, Noor Saudi, spoke with Barbara. So let's go to the tape.
I spoke with experts who talked about the ways in which we have seen political violence emerging over several election cycles and how that can have an impact on civic engagement from women who have been gradually increasing their political power in terms of elected office. And so it raises questions because there are reports that indicate that this was a targeted attack. What message does this send to people, women in particular, who may be interested in political office in the future? That has ripple effects for an inclusive democracy where different folks are running for office and have more of a say on policy decisions.
Yeah, it's kind of scary.
Maria, I got takes, but I want to get yours first.
You know, I think that, I mean, it is Nancy Pelosi's husband, after all. It's not a man member of Congress. It's her husband.
Yeah.
The importance being her. So this is misogyny. And I think in general, this is one of the things that is keeping me a little bit blue these days. I mean, blue in the...
You mean like sad, but like...
Yeah, not like Democratic, like... Is that there does feel like there is this general misogyny in news media. Mm. I just kind of get this tinge of it throughout. And you can't really put your finger on it.
Say more.
Well, I don't know. The thing is...
I'm curious.
That's why I'm saying it's like, it's not very overt, but I'm kind of feeling it.
Yeah.
It's like this story just kind of happened and it got, not buried in some ways, but... You know, it's normalizing this. I mean, imagine if this had happened, you know, a decade ago.
Yeah, there's no complete condemnation is probably what you're getting at.
I think that's what it is that there's...
You know, it's like this joke by Carrie Lake, which is really a fucking awful joke. I'm sorry. It's not even a joke. It's just a an insult. Nancy Pelosi, well, she's got protection when she's in D.C. Apparently, her house doesn't have a lot of protection and people laughed. What's interesting, too, is like people laughed. There was no one in the room who was like, that's disgusting.
Yeah, it's just disgusting.
I mean, whatever you want to say, right? You know, Nancy Pelosi is a public figure. Paul Pelosi is the spouse of Nancy Pelosi. But there is a line that you never cross. And I think about, you know, Paul Pelosi is a dad, a grandfather.
He's 82 years old.
Friend. You know what I mean? It's like to people like
82.
That's the part where I'm kind of like, you know, more class. I mean, I'm still stuck at what Eugene Robinson said on Morning Joe this week. When you act that way, you're just being mean. Like you're a mean person. Like you're an asshole.
And so the politics of meanness, right? And that's what's become normalized. Is this just like...
Right. And Republicans are all in, like I said, it's like the Roman Empire with them.
Oh, God.
It's all about the power. It's a scorched earth type idea. But Maria, can I just say something about DePape?
I know what you're going to say.
These guys from Canada coming in with conspiracy theories. He's overstayed his temporary visit to U.S., right? Do you know when he came to the U.S.? 2008 from Canada.
And I like the way that people are like, he might be deported. It's like,
I mean, let's just be real. If it was, you know, Jose Rodriguez from...
Imagínate.
From El Salvador, like, it would just be a different story. But these Canadians, I don't know.
Exacto. And that's why.
Doesn't fit the narrative.
So when people say they use that derogatory term illegal or undocumented immigrant, yes, everyone immediately thinks of people who are brown and speak Spanish or black and from Africa or from Haiti. But you don't necessarily think about all of the Europeans or the Canadians in this case.
I know.
Who are here without papers.
I know. Well, listen, it was a violent attack. We wanted to talk about it. I'm not necessarily sure how it will impact the midterms because Republicans are being so
disgusting,
ridiculously disgusting.
It's the normalization of violence.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's horrible. It cannot be normalized. But political violence in our country is nothing new.
Listen, so moving on to our second topic, which is somewhat related. Speaking of political violence, there is voter intimidation that we've been seeing in multiple states across, what'd you say, the world's greatest democracy? You know, question mark, question mark. A federal judge in Arizona imposed new restrictions on Tuesday, saying that these armed members of a right-wing group who have been monitoring, you know, have you seen these pictures, Maria? They've been monitoring these ballot boxes.
I actually haven't seen the pictures.
No, they're literally by the ballot boxes, armed. So like,
Jesus.
In Maricopa County. So think about that.
Because you can do open carry?
Yeah. And Maricopa County is, you know, Latino. But now the judge said on Tuesday that they have to stay at least 250 feet away. But
you still have to pass them.
That's what I said. And I'm like, I'm like, whoa. Okay. Similar incidents were reported in Pennsylvania. No surprise. We're also seeing a rise in misinformation. Mm-mm-mm. And then in Texas, precinct chair for the Travis County Republican Party was going door to door accusing people of illegally voting by mail.
Jesus.
Okay.
Okay. So instead of going door to door to register people to vote, you're going door to door to terrorize people.
Exactly.
Against voting.
You know, I kind of wish like, he knocked on my mom's door. That would be over in a second. Anyway, we've already seen a large number of election workers resign over the past couple of years because of the increase in threats to their lives.
Right.
Okay. So think about that, Maria.
That was a big takeaway from January 6th.
You're a democracy geek and people who are working elections are like, I'm quitting because I fear for my life. Okay. So our producer, Harsha Nahata, spoke with Natalia Contreras, who's a reporter based in Texas for VoteBeat, and it's a nonprofit newsroom covering election administration and voting access. Let's take a listen.
One of the things that we have been seeing is that there are groups out there that have been sending out information to voters. And so if that keeps happening, that could, you know, possibly, you know, lead to more intimidation and to voters wondering, well, you know, did I cast my ballot where I was supposed to, you know? And so here in this situation, what we're hearing, not just from advocates, but also from election administrators, is that there needs to be more of a push from everyone, you know, us as journalists too, but the community in general, and also community leaders, people in positions of power, to let people know who they should be getting the correct information from so that they're not misled and so that they're not intimidated if they see anything like this or if they get a letter like this or if they get a knock on their door, which has also happened. You know, these groups are knocking on people's doors and verifying, you know, that they're eligible to vote, and that should not be happening. We need to be making sure that our communities are empowered with the tools they need in order to know what's accurate and what isn't.
Maria, thoughts?
You know, it's weird because here in New York,
yeah,
it's such a different experience, right? I mean, here it's a very community experience in Harlem. You know, people walk around proudly wearing their I voted. They're welcomed now into the polling places. I mean, it's just, it's a very different thing. And I'm reading about this Vice News investigation, which is, by the way, good for you, Vice News, that they uncovered reports of election officials demanding that voters hand over their smartphones and smartwatches before voting. And then they found that some of the poll workers were looking over voters' shoulders and wearing partisan attire. What is going on?
Wow.
And you think, like, how is this happening? And it's just, you have to imagine the number of polling places that there are. Imagine having to protect all of those polling places. You know, in most countries where there is ridiculous amounts of fraud and corruption, I'm pausing there. There are, you know, international observers that spread out over.
Can you imagine if international observers came to the United States?
Es que eso es lo que tiene que pasar. And Jimmy Carter, he has actually said this. We need to have international observers coming in.
Yeah, exactly.
And if we have no problems, as they say, then everybody should be allowed in.
Are we co-hosts or something? Are you reading my mind? Because it's literally making the point that I want to make about what happened in Brazil.
Okay.
Jair Bolsonaro lost to Lula on Sunday. And everyone talks about Bolsonaro being the next Trump and election denier and all that. And he basically has not conceded, but he basically said, like, we got to transition to power because all his allies, unlike Trump, are like, dude, the election's real, right? So suck it up. We're not denying this election. And this is the difference. The voting system in Brazil, it's all electronic. They had the results done by like 7 o'clock at night on Sunday, that massive presidential election. And it's really an amazing system. And here we are talking about American voting systems when there are other systems in this world that actually are better.
Exacto.
You know, and everyone talks about, oh, Brazil corrupt or other countries, but you can say what you want. We are the problem right now as a democracy.
What an interesting take to, you know.
Only at Futuro.
Imagine getting a contract with the Brazilian voting machines.
Exactly. We talked about this on Latino Rebels Radio with Roberta Braga because I asked her and she said, the system works in Brazil.
Learn from the South.
I was like, damn. Okay, that's an in the thick take, right?
We put it out there first.
From Futuro Media and PRX, Latino Rebels Radio is an award-winning OG Latino podcast covering stories of the Latino experience that matter in the United States, the Caribbean, Central America, South America, and even parts of the universe. Lo que sea. Created for, about, and by Latinos, join us every Thursday by subscribing to Latino Rebels Radio wherever you get your podcasts.
Speaking of putting things out there first, we are going to talk about Twitter.
Okay, let's go. I'm ready.
I'm sad, but I'm really disgusted about what's happening at Twitter. So since Elon Musk acquired Twitter last week for $44 billion, he has fired top executives. He's announced mass layoffs to start on Friday, today.
Yeah.
Hundreds, if not thousands, of employees.
Yep.
In response, Twitter employees have filed a class action lawsuit against Musk in San Francisco in federal court.
Yeah.
Now, in the days following his takeover, Musk, who clearly is just so greedy, and I don't know, I think this is the other thing that I feel like disgusted by, just like outright greed, kind of the way I feel about the Republicans, which is outright power. So Musk floated the idea to charge monthly fees for blue check marks, which are used to verify the real accounts of public figures, journalists, academics, companies, et cetera, like you and me, Julio.
Yeah.
We started talking about the attack on Nancy Pelosi's husband.
Yeah.
Elon Musk also promoted false information. So Dan Rather is, if you follow him, he's just got phenomenal takes. So I tweeted out, like, wherever Dan Rather goes, I'm going to go.
I like this.
I keep on thinking like, okay, there's an opportunity for something extraordinary to happen. I remember when Twitter first started, how against it I was, but now there's an opportunity. I try to keep thinking about the opportunity because in the end, we are talking about democracy, right? That's really what the issue is.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that Donald Trump, you know, used Twitter to get to the presidency. So it is part of our democratic conversation. How are you feeling, Mr. Guy who taught me everything I need to know about Twitter?
Mr., I've been on Twitter since like 2008, which is 14 years. But what's interesting is that a platform like Twitter helped create communities that I helped form, like Latino Rebels, because of the underrepresentation of Latinos and Latinas online. And I found that community on Twitter like 14, 15 years ago, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's really tough for me because it's like a garden. It's like this garden has been built. Obviously, you know, I'm working for Futuro now and, you know, we use it because we're small and we're a media outlet that is underinvested and underrepresented. And I'm not
tiny, but mighty,
And we use this. So philosophically, I believe in Twitter because it gives people access and voice. and gives them an opportunity to share who they are. But come on, Elon Musk. Twitter is Twitter because people are using it. If we all leave, Twitter's dead.
It seems like that's exactly what he wants to do.
Yeah, that, I feel like he wants to implode it.
Right.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if that's what happens. I think people don't understand how it's become part of global society. Although, you know, we'll just go to TikTok and Instagram. So there you go.
Well, nothing is permanent, right?
Yeah.
To me, there's an element of like, oh, you think Twitter is going to be around forever and ever and ever. And it's like, actually, in the United States, nothing really is permanent. Some guy can come and actually destroy it. And you are right. The data take is that Twitter, along with Facebook, they're losing their influence in terms of delivering news to people.
Yeah.
And the sites that are increasing are Instagram, my favorite, and TikTok, which obviously, you know, I'm going to go on TikTok tomorrow.
Oh, but the thing is, just your example, your Twitter audience has grown immensely over the last 7 years, right? And you've seen some benefits to that for your work, right? I mean, it's a hard call.
Yeah, but it's funny because while I do think of Twitter as a way to promote great work, not just myself or our work, it's the place where I like to turn to ask it. Like, it's silly.
Yeah.
Like, I have a bruised rib right now. My trainer hugged me too hard. I know. It's, I swear.
Oh my God. I'm sorry.
I would go on Twitter and I'd just be like, so what do you recommend, fam? You know, it's 100 and several thousand people that I see there.
And they give you advice.
And they're like, oh, try this or try that. Or my birder community.
Yeah.
You know, but it's not a place now where I'm putting myself out there. On Friday morning, I did because I was on TV and such, but I don't feel it. And so I miss the community aspect of it. And so I,
yeah,
like I said, I'll follow Dan Rather. And I think he's going to TikTok if he's not already there.
Listen, before we go, I saw, speaking of Instagram, because, you know, I follow your Instagram stories, you mentioned something, you were at an event.
So Barnard College hosted a rally for New York Governor Democratic candidate Kathy Hochul. And so they brought in the big guns. Letitia James was there, and Hillary Clinton, and the vice president, Kamala Harris. So, yeah, I mean, it was an opportunity to meet the vice president, which I did. We've been wanting to talk with her for a long time since she was a candidate.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was definitely behind the scenes, very interesting to watch. There was all of the New York women's power, like Nidia Velázquez was there.
Most powerful Puerto Rican woman.
Carolyn Maloney was there. Union members were there.
Wow.
There are reports that actually, believe it or not, there is a tight race for the governor of New York, Kathy Hochul. So that's another reason why I think they wanted to draw attention and have this big moment for her. Some of the students were not very happy about it because they were like, we didn't get tickets. We were told at the last minute. It feels kind of undemocratic. And some were out there saying, you know, Barnard should not be putting up money and attention to this when they have issues that they need to resolve on campus for other students. So I thought that was interesting. But
the democracy in action.
Look, and I was teaching class as they were prepping the event because it's my Thursday to teach on Barnard College campus, my alma mater. So there was excitement. But you know what, Julio? That event really should have been at Queens College, Borough of Manhattan Community College, Ostos, yeah, Community College in the South Bronx.
Yeah, someplace a little bit, yeah.
Because it makes sense to have it at Barnard, a women's college, but do an event here and then get yourselves over to the communities. Queens, South Bronx, Bronx. It's a perfect opportunity. And it's the way in which you and I see lost opportunities for the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
We'll see. But you know what? I did get a chance to see Kamala Harris' campaign. She took control of that stage.
Mm.
Well, Letitia James, too. She was definitely on point. And the people who were in that room were fired up. So we'll see how that translates. I'm going to vote today, Friday, end of the day. I'm going to early vote with my husband. So that's happening.
All right.
That's a wrap. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela.
Uno, dos, tres.
Dear listener, go to Apple Podcasts to rate and review us because you know it helps. Also, listen to us on all major podcast platforms. Check us out on the web at inthethick.org. Follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at InTheThickShow. And like us on Facebook and tell your friends and family to listen. In the Thick is produced by Noor Saadi, Harsha Nahata, and our New York Women's Foundation Ignite Fellow, Daniela Tello Garzón. Our editorial director is Fernanda Santos. Our audio engineering team is Stephanie Lebeau, Julia Caruso, Gabriela Baez, and JJ Carubin. Our marketing manager is Luis Luna. Thanks to Raul Perez for recording me. The music you heard is courtesy of Nacional Captain ZZK Records. We are not speeding the sound up, people. That's for real. We'll see you on our next episode. Dear listener, remember, tell everyone you see, everyone, ask them, did you vote? You gonna vote? Ready to vote? That's what it takes. That is also democracy in action with a small D. We appreciate it. And remember, no te vayas. Bye.
It slices, it dices, it's in the thick. See ya.
Oh my God, I love it. It slices, it dices, it's in the thick.
Oh, is that like Romco presents?
Yeah.
The knife with 18,000 blades. Gotta cut tomatoes? Boom.
The opinions expressed by the guests and contributors in this podcast are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of Futuro Media or its employees.
From PRX.